Sunday with Miriam on RT Radio 1, sponsored by Travel Department. Explore the wonder of the world's most iconic sites with Travel Department. The world discovered together.
Now, when Alan Bobanac first arrived in Ireland from the island of Krk in Croatia, he had very little to his name, not even enough money to bring his twin brother Jay along with him. Alan found himself jobless and homeless in Dublin. And when Jay followed Alan to Ireland, he too was homeless. But 10 years later, it's a really different story, to the point where the two brothers recently got an award from the then Lord Mayor, Emma Blane. Alan and Jay Bobanac, welcome to studio.
Hey, morning.
It's such an inspirational story. Listen, Alan, I'll start with you. Tell me a little bit about where you grew up and why you felt you needed to leave.
So we grew up in Croatia on this small island called Krk. Essentially, there wasn't very many opportunities there. We always felt like, even with work and everything, we finished the secondary school in 2014. And then there was nothing there. We were just kind of wasting time. And we always wanted to do big things and be successful and work and stuff like that. And throughout our childhood, we had many plans as what we were going to do when we reached the age of 18. And so we got lucky because in 2015, we managed a car park for a summer. That kind of came about very quickly, and it was only a few weeks. And we earned just enough money for one of us to try to go out in the world and do something with that money, because we didn't know when the next opportunity was going to come. So Jay actually went to the nearest city. He purchased a one-way ticket and a tent, and I came to Ireland in October 5th of 2015. And then from day one, I would drag my suitcase behind with me, and I would apply. I would just hand out my CVs wherever I thought, you know, people would want them. I would give them out, and for 4 weeks I was walking around the city. I didn't know anyone. I was sleeping in Stephen's Green, and I had this blanket that had a Formula One on it that we had for 10 years. So that was kind of my life, and I was surviving on €1 a day. I would buy cans of beans, peas, spaghetti hoops, stuff like that. And I actually counted that my money was going to last for about 4 months before I ran out. And I thought, what's going to happen here? Am I going to starve? But then luckily, I was introduced to homeless services, such as the Lighthouse, where we work right now with the Glen. And that was a huge burden off of my shoulders, because I knew I had food, and I wasn't going to starve, and everything was going to work out eventually.
And Jay, you're identical twins, actually.
We are, yeah.
How old are you both, by the way?
We're 28 right now.
Now, how did you make the decision, I suppose, at the time, that Alan would go to Ireland first and leave you behind? How did you make the decision who would go first?
Well, let me give you a bit of context for Alan, kind of skipped the story there. Back then, Croatia was... It wasn't the best situation. I think unemployment was 25%. For youth, it was probably even more, probably over 50. We kind of come from, let's call it, a bit of a broken family in a small town that was heavily dependent on 4 months of the... Well, from April to September, the only industry was tourism. Mm. So we didn't have any money. We didn't have... It was day-to-day, it was tough. So we knew that to make a good life, which was essentially our main objective, was just to have a normal life, good life, whatever that means. So we knew that, considering Croatia joined the EU, we knew that it's much better for us to go somewhere else, because we were either going to go somewhere in Croatia and most likely end up in the same scenario, because we didn't have any family contacts or any friends or anything like that. So we decided to go to Ireland. The reason Alan went is because it was really an unspoken agreement. We kind of worked this job on the car park, and he worked more of it than me. And we just kind of decided it was going to be him. And we hoped that wherever he went, he would find work quite quickly, and that beyond there, I would come. That wouldn't take too long, but it took about 4 months. He worked, he worked in Keelings picking fruit, which gave him €50. And then one day I got a message from him that there's a ticket, airplane ticket to Dublin. And the airplane ticket was from Basel, Switzerland. So I kind of had to make my way there, come here. And I came, I think I literally had 10 cents in my pocket. And then from there on, we were homeless. But not to make it kind of a grim scenario in that there's different services across the city. We slept rough. Each evening, we would pretty much gather up kind of wasted cardboard down Grafton Street. And we would jump over the fence into Stephen's Green. But in the morning, we would wake up and we would go to different services. You know, the likes of the Lighthouse, the likes of Capuchin Day Center. And then in the evenings, we'd go to various soup runs.
But, you know, it's fascinating to sit opposite the two of you because you're so clearly highly intelligent, well-educated. How difficult was it, though, for you both to end up literally sleeping rough? That must have been very, very difficult, was it?
Well, Alan, I know first 4 weeks was a really a taster of homelessness for you.
Yeah, well, I certainly approach it as a mission. So when you live on the street, every day feels like a year. I didn't have a smartphone or there was no distractions. And the biggest thing is really the uncertainty. So you don't really, there's this pressure of, you know, what's going to happen. Mm. And so yeah, it's as tough as it gets. One thing that characterizes living in the street is safety. So the way I describe it is when you go to sleep the night, there's at least two locked doors between you and danger. Whereas when you sleep on the street, there's nothing between you and danger. If I'm to give you one example, I was sleeping on the ground and I was covered with this blanket that I had and I heard this faintest sound and I didn't know what it was. I thought it was probably a fox, so I didn't even bother checking. And then later when it started raining, I looked up and my suitcase was open and all my stuff was all over the place. And there was nothing to steal, but even when you have nothing and you live on the street, there's still people out there who don't care about it. And so that was kind of my first taste of that. So on so many occasions, let's say you wake up in the middle of the night and there's somebody walking around you, the kind of predatory kind of behavior. So there's a lot of that stuff.
But the great thing is, Jay, tell me about meeting Aubrey McCarthy from Tiglin, now Senator Aubrey McCarthy. Yes, yeah. That changed everything for you.
It really did, because up until that point, our life was wake up in the park and then go to different services. We'd go to the Dublin Library in ILAC Center and we'd go to Indeed and Jobs.ie and we'd apply to all these different things as well as dropping in different CVs. Now, the issue when you come into the country for the first time is you don't have a PPS number, you don't have a bank account. So you're essentially, it takes a few things in order to kind of get set up. But yeah, we met Aubrey. It was on O'Connell Street. So Tiglin is an organization that essentially provides various services to help people escape homelessness and addiction. One of the services they had at that time was No Bucks Cafe, which was a mobile bus that would park on O'Connell Street underneath Cleary's Clock, and it would park there 3 days a week. So basically, 7 to 10 people could come in and they could get some food, they could get some drinks, and they could also kind of get kind of a little bit of information and things like that. And that's where we met Aubrey. And Aubrey was first time we kind of didn't know who he was. He said he was a bus driver, but turns out he was the founder of the charity. Mm. And he kind of reminded us of Jeremy Clarkson. He was very much like impressionable, talking to us. Now, to paint the picture, when we first came, we were very, very shy, nothing like today. So we were very weary of so he kind of approached us in a very kind of, who are you? You know, where do you guys come from? What do you do? Very, very much like on the same level. And then kind of skip the story forward is he got onto his managers to see if there's anything he can do for us. Because obviously when you meet somebody like us, you don't know who these guys are. Are they dodgy? So he got onto his managers and they kind of helped us to get into transitional housing and employment. But also to say other things is I think he actually gave me my first job, which was part-time. He was moving houses. So that allowed me to get a letter from employer, to get a bank account, PPS, all these type of things. Mm. And then, you know, it really developed into a personal friendship. And then once we got into the transitional house, to explain what that is that's a kind of medium to long term, minimum a year, housing, reduced kind of rent. I think it was 50 euros a week. So we got to stay there for about a year.
So you got off the streets?
Yes, essentially.
Which is great. And I gather Sabina Higgins, our first lady, she was, you met her and she's been really good to you.
Yeah, yeah. So that's one of the stories. The first,
a lovely story. Yeah,
yeah. So we got into the housing in December of 2016. And then some days after we got into the housing, we were invited to, with Aubrey, to the Ora Sanutran. And that's where we went there for the first time. Obviously, we got the suits and everything. And going in there just, you know, a few days ago, we were literally sleeping across the road from Ora. So we got in, and Sabina and the president, Michael D. Higgins, were extremely welcoming to us. We connected, and it was just a lovely time.
And did you tell them you'd been sleeping in the park?
Yeah. So I mean, I was pretty honest about it. I said, you know, we're neighbors because we were just sleeping across the road. But from there on, we really kind of developed into a bit of a friendship. Really appreciate everything they did for us and for Tiglin. And they kind of stay in touch, and really lovely.
And the great thing is, Alan, you've both engaged in education. Neither of you, luckily enough, had any addiction issues. So, but tell me about the education you've done and what you're both doing now.
Yeah, so I think Ireland is a brilliant place, especially in terms of education. I think since the moment we came here, we had equal opportunities as anyone else, and that included education. So we started pursuing education when we moved into transition housing, and it was slow enough, you know, small little courses. But then over time, that progressed into bigger and bigger courses, and then both of us took on a master's degrees later on, and then this year both of us graduated with our second master's.
Wow!
So,
congratulations!
Yeah,
and I think big kind of breakthrough for us came when SETU, Southeast Technological University, gave us an opportunity to do this, and then actually that kind of had a ripple effect in that now there's a pilot with Tiglin and SETU where 100 people a year do this. So we were kind of fortunate enough to pave the path as such.
So absolutely brilliant. And at the moment, I think, is this right? You're in communications, Jay, with Tiglin, and Alan, you run the lighthouse.
Yeah, I'd love to share a little bit about the lighthouse here, because I think there's a lot of audience there that can get involved with this. So the lighthouse is a homeless cafe in Pier Street, 28 Pier Street. And it's open 7 days a week. So essentially what that is, you get people that live on the street, and they get to come in and they get to enjoy the space. So the way I approach it is, I say it's a living room for those in need of one. Through my experiences of being homeless and living in the street, I always had loads of ideas about what we can do. So from day one, when I was given, I suppose, the keys, I introduced all these new initiatives. So one is music, live music. I don't think there's anyone doing that. So when you walk in, it's like being in a nice house, the way everything's designed. It's very welcoming. You get your live music, you get nice food. So it changes everything. Other initiatives included bingo nights, movie nights, a clothing market. Clothing market, what that is you go to the lighthouse on a Friday, 4 o'clock, and you get to pick out the clothes you want. Because generally, when you go to these services, you just take what you're given. So this kind of changes everything. I'll give you another one that I think you'll like is Miss Ireland. She actually came in one day and she styled the women. So essentially the possibilities are endless. So if there's any musicians out there or anyone that has an idea that they can contribute to the place, they're certainly very welcome.
Such a wonderful initiative.
Just on the work of Tiglin, it's kind of beyond it. The lighthouse, for example, it provides all these things, but then also there's professional support. So this whole ethos and mission is to kind of build human capital and to kind of help restore lives. So that's kind of behind every service.
So what did it mean to both of you getting an award from the Lord Mayor, along with Brendan Gleeson, Johnny Sexton, Rashida Adeleke and others? I mean, you so deserved it, but was it special?
To the way we describe it is, I said to us, it was the Oscars. It's the biggest recognition you can get for the work we did for the city. And even when you look at the other honorees, we were the only ones who weren't in the public eye. after your show, hopefully it changes. And I saw Brenton was actually on your show a few weeks ago, and I'll give you, he actually gave us advice there. I asked him, Brenton, this is like the Oscars for us, so can you give us a little bit of advice as to accepting the award? And he said, well, I'm an actor, so you just act. So just act like the best actor you know. And I said, well, that's a great idea. I'll just act like a Colin Farrell. But yeah, it's certainly a recognition of all our work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it stands for something now, because we're very excited about the future and about what's next. And I think this is just, it's like all you put all the chips, and hopefully, you know, whatever comes next, people see the work and they see the effort that we put in.
I think you're a remarkable duo of twin brothers. I mean, you were only 18 when you came here. You were so young, the pair of you. And you're here today as well, Jay, with your lovely musician girlfriend.
Yes, tell me quickly. Yes, Victoria Johnston. She's a wonderful girl. She's actually a musician. She performs with Celtic Calling and her own music as well, Victoria Johnston. And yeah, look her up. Very, very, very interesting music, very cultural, Irish, traditional Celtic, very exciting. You should have a listen yourself as well.
Yeah. But look, it's a really inspirational story. It's been my privilege to have you in here today, Jay and Alan Bobinock. Thank you so much. Congrats on all you've achieved. Congrats on your award and on all your success. And I wish you the very best for the future. And listen, for anyone who wants to find out more about the services offered by Tiglin, they can go to tiglin.ie. Thanks both so much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.